Okay. We're turning our thoughts now for next few Tuesday nights to the last week in Christ's life. And like we did last year, we're going to do again this year, which is what I call fill in the blanks. I try to pick the high moments, talk about on Sunday morning, but there's an awful lot of stuff we skip over because there's just not enough time. And so I like to use Tuesday nights leading up to this, try and fill in some of the blanks, some of the things that we skip over because we can't possibly cover it all. And you know that last week we talked about, last Sunday, we talked about Jesus and the stress of the temple and how Mary read that and figured that out in her mind and then anointed him. And we talked about two instances on Sunday, one which was they came to him and said, by what authority do you clear this temple? Who said you could do that? And then again, they brought him a question, which was, should we pay taxes to Caesar? We talked about his answer to that. But there's a whole lot more going on than just those instances. Those are the key instances. We're going to think about what happened and so forth. And we know on Sunday, he rides a colt into Jerusalem. We call that Palm Sunday now. And we believe that on Sunday he rode through into the temple, gets into the temple, looks around, and leaves. All right. And then Monday, we believe he comes back and he clears the temple, in particular, money changers. He throws them. We think that happened Monday. And then the beginning of these conversations that we're going to talk about begins Monday. Tuesday, we know he's back in the temple again. And so he's been there Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. We got a lot of conversation, a lot of things going on. That's what we're going to look at tonight, some of the things that are going on. Wednesday, we think, was a rest day. That he didn't go into Jerusalem, probably because Tuesday night, Judas went to Jerusalem. And so they're at the point now where you just don't know what's going to happen because he knows why Judas went. And I'm sure he took note of it. I'm not sure most people did, but I'm sure Jesus knew that Judas had suddenly disappeared on Tuesday night and gone in and got his 30 pieces of silver. So there's a caution that Jesus uses. So we think he rested in Bethany on Wednesday. Thursday is to prepare for Passover. And there's preparations made for Passover. He does not come into town until after dark because he has to hide now. He cannot be out in public because they'll find him. And you never know what Judas has planned. And so that's Thursday, of course, and have what we call the Last Supper. And then Friday, of course, he's arrested in the a.m., like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, and by 9 o'clock, he's crucified. So that was an amazingly fast set of circumstances. These guys were ready to roll, and they ran 3 trials within a couple of hours, and then got him into Pilate and had him condemned before 9 o'clock. He's taken out and crucified at 9 o'clock. So there's a lot of events happening, and we're going to turn our thoughts to tonight is Monday and Tuesday. We're looking at here the tension in the temple. There's a couple of things you need to know. One is that the temple is huge. You got no concept of how big it is. It's 27 acres walled in, all right? That's a big piece of property, okay? It was beautifully cut into the mountainside, was built on Mount Zion, and on the top of the mountain, of course, is the Holy of Holies. Built there. That's where the focus is, on the top of the mountain. Then they would take 12 steps down, cut into the solid rock, take 12 steps down, have another level, 12 steps down, have another level, 12 steps down, have another level. And the buildings are up on the top, the main buildings, the temple. On the sides are what you and I would call office buildings or whatever, where the priests and the leadership did their business. And then there'd be open ground down below. And so there's probably more than 20 acres of just open ground. And what it would do was some rabbi would go and he'd stand over there. So I'm going to give a lesson today. And he might get, 40, 50 people, all right? Jesus comes, and he's got, hundreds gathered around him. And so the driving force behind the tension is that Jesus is popular. He's a lot more popular than they are. Way more, all right? He is very popular. And that's their issue. They were hoping he wouldn't come, I'm sure. And when he came riding in on a donkey amongst a cheering crowd, they're going, oh, why did this have to happen? Why do we have to have this? So now his popularity is probably at an all-time high. All right, it's really the support as he comes into Jerusalem. They're shouting and screaming and waving branches. So these people in the temple that run the temple are very unhappy with that. And so we got a couple of different groups. We have the Pharisees and scribes, which you could be a Pharisee and be a scribe, okay? Scribe was kind of a lawyer, really, what you and I would call a lawyer. Pharisees were a political group, but they were pretty well educated, pretty smart in their what they had learned, and they were experts, quote, in their own mind, experts in the Bible. And the Pharisees said, we will tell you what the Bible means. All right? So that's what they came out, and when these rabbis would come down, teachers, there's a good chance that he's a scribe, that he's a lawyer, and pretty likely he's a Pharisee, too. That was the biggest movement, was the Pharisees. There's another group that we'll take a quick look at called the Sadducees. The Sadducees. And how this ever got to be, I can't explain. I don't know if anybody can explain it. But the leading family in the temple were Sadducees. Now, that would be the high priest, Caiaphas, and his father-in-law, Annas. And Caiaphas and Annas were the two brains behind the Friday morning thing that happened. Probably Annas was the big brain behind it as they took Jesus, arrested him, tried him three times, and got him ready to be crucified. So, but they're Sadducees. And the way you always remember it is they don't believe in the resurrection. All right, so they believe once you die, you're dead. It's all over. All right? And that's why they're sad, you see. Okay? And you can always remember that. And he calls us here, how come, well, who's the Sadducee? He doesn't believe in life after death. You know, it's kind of strange. If you're in charge of a temple, that's supposed to be the Jewish temple, and you don't believe in life after death, what happened? What happened? Well, somewhere along the way, political power stepped in, and Annas is the political master of the crew, and he is leading his family, and he, between his sons and his son-in-law, Caiaphas was his son-in-law, he has seven people in his immediate family who are high priest. And so how they get to be high priest? They pay money to the Romans. They pay the Romans. They give a bribe to the Romans, say, we're going to have this guy, John, be our next high priest. That's good. And they put the money in their pocket. And so the Romans approved the high priest. And so this family had seven people in it, brothers and in-laws and so forth, that were in charge. And how that came to be is a strange thing. But what is clear, all right, is that the temple has become almost entirely political. It's not spiritual anymore. It's become political. And the Romans are breathing down their necks. And if you were to look, because this is kind of a strange thing, you're on the Mount Zion, and here's the temple. It's the main building right up on the top of Mount Zion. It was put there to be in the highest spot. Behind it, there's a fortress. It's the Roman fortress. And the Roman fortress is higher than the temple, which was an abomination to a good Jew. Unless you're getting paid, you're paying your way, you know. So everything was kind of collapsing. As Jesus comes in, things are really not what they should be, all right? And so he's going to attack these situations tonight. And it is the most intense attack that Jesus really ever did. And he did it, we think, on Monday, as they come up and they begin to approach him. All right, now, I'm going to look at chapter 21, and I'm looking at verse 28. And if you were to look up a couple of verses, you'll see this is where they said to him, who gave you the authority to clear the temple? And he says, well, I'll answer your question if you answer mine. Was John the Baptist from heaven, or was he just a man? And now here's what you got to note, because this is very carefully the main issue. There are common people all around, and they want these conflicts with Jesus to be in a large audience. Why? Because if they can trip Jesus up, they're hoping to change the people's opinion of Jesus. And so they come walking up to him. There's a big crowd all gathered around. Who gave you the right? Why do you have authority to throw people out of our temple? Well, they were cheaters and liars and shortchangers and all the rest of it. All right. And Jesus said, my house is supposed to be what? House of prayer. And you made it a den of thieves. So they're out. And he tosses them out. And they say, well, who gave you the authority? He says, well, John the Baptist. Tell me, was he from heaven or was he a man? And they're pretty clever. And they say, well, if we say he's from man, the people are going to shout, oh no, he's a prophet. So if we say he's from heaven, they'll ask, well, why didn't you believe him? So they said, oh, well, we don't know. He said, well, I'm not going to answer your question if you won't answer mine. So once again, in front of the crowd, he comes out on top. All right, now, immediately after that question, verse 28, we are, chapter 21 of Matthew, verse 28. Here's what he says. What think ye? A certain man had two sons, and he came to the first and said, Son, go work today in my vineyard. And he answered and said, I will not. But afterwards he repented and went. And he came to the second and said, likewise. And he answered and said, I go, sir, and went not. Whether of them twain did the will of his father? They say unto him, the first. And Jesus said unto them, verily I say unto thee that the publicans and harlots go into the kingdom of God before you. All right. And so here's the question that comes up. There's a father says, two sons. He said, go out and work. I'm not going out and work. All right, I will. And he goes and works. Says he repented and changed his mind, or in other words, went out and worked. The other one, he says, how about you? You got to go work too. Oh, I will. I promise I will. But he never went. All right? So which one did the will of his father? They said, well, the first one, obviously, even though he said no first, he turned around and went out and did it. Right? So he calls this, I say to the publicans and harlots go into the kingdom of God before you. So what he's doing is he's comparing these two people, these two sons. The first son, he says, is like the harlots and publicans, all right? That would be in everybody's mind the scum of society. So here's the scum of society, the lowest creatures. They are in full rebellion against God in their lifestyle. They don't do the will of God. One's a harlot, all right, a prostitute. The other one's a publican. He probably cheats everybody that he does business. He's a tax collector. Tax collector for the Romans. On the bottom of the pile, the people hate him, all right? So he says, you got these people, and they live in rebellion against God, but they listened to John, and they repented, changed their mind, and came to believe, all right? He said, you guys are like the other son. God says, go work, and you say, oh, I will. I'm gonna. You know I always do. And he never did. So here's the comparison. Verse 31. Verily I say unto you that the publicans and harlots go into the kingdom of God before you. For John came unto you in the way of righteousness, and you believed him not. But the publicans and harlots believed him. And you, when you had seen it, repented not afterwards that you might believe him. All right, so they should have looked and said, boy, look at these people. They're changing their mind. They're turning their lives around. And because of John's preaching, they're becoming repenting people, changing their lifestyle. So you said you should have listened and saw that and gone and believed John, but you didn't. All right, so here another parable. You're going to tell them another story. Verse 33. It was a certain householder which planted a vineyard and hedged it round about, digged a wine press in it, built a tower, let it out to husbandmen, and went into a far country. When the time of fruit drew near, he sent his servants to the husbandmen that they might receive the fruits of it. The husbandman took his servants, beat one, killed another, stoned another. Again he sent other servants more than the first, and they did unto them likewise. Last of all he sent them his own son, saying, they will reverence my son. When the husbandmen saw the son, they said among themselves, this is the heir. Come, let us kill him. Let us seize on his inheritance. And they caught him, cast him out of the vineyard, and slew him. When the Lord therefore of the vineyard cometh, what will he do to these husbandmen? And they say unto him, he'll miserably destroy those wicked men, and let out his vineyard to another husband, which will render him the fruits in their seasons. All right, so he asked the question, what would they do? If this happened, if you saw something like this happen, what do you think should happen? Well, they should get those people out of there. Put somebody else in the vineyard. Okay? And Jesus said unto them, 42, did you never read in the scripture? Stone which the builders rejected, the same has become the head of the corner. This is the Lord's doing, and it is marvelous in our eyes. He's quoting from Psalms, and he's telling him where it says there's a stone that the builders didn't want. Okay? So Jesus is that stone. All right? We don't want Jesus. We don't want him. We reject him as part of the temple. All right, so the Pharisees, the scribes, and Sadducees run the place. We don't want Jesus. He's out. All right, we don't want him as part of our building. So the stone that the builders rejected has become the head of the corner. All right, so God said, I'm going to build another building. He's going to be the head of the corner. Verse 43. Therefore, I say unto you, the kingdom of God shall be taken from you, given to a nation, bringing forth the fruits thereof. Whosoever shall fall on this stone shall be broken. So if you say to yourself, this stone, we don't want anything to do it, you trip on it while you're walking away, you're going to break your leg. But on whosoever it shall fall, it'll grind him to powder. So Jesus is saying, you guys are not running this temple like you're supposed to. It's not become anymore a place of worship, a house of prayer. He said, and so you're going to be ground to powder. Now, here's the thing, 45. When the chief priests and Pharisees heard his parables, they perceived that he spake of them. He's talking about us. He can't be talking about us like that in front of the crowd. He's talking about us. And they sought to lay hands on him. They feared the multitude as they took him for a prophet. So they're afraid of Jesus' popularity. And so they're going to challenge him again and again. They'll challenge him with Caesar's. Should we give taxes to Caesar in chapter 22? And then we get a little visit from the Sadducees. The Sadducees hated the Pharisees. And back and forth. And so the Sadducees said, we're going to take a crack at Jesus. Here's the ridiculous thing that they said. Chapter 22, verse 23. Same day came to him the Sadducees, which say that there is no resurrection, and asked him, saying, Master, Moses said, if a man die having no children, his brother shall marry his wife, raise up seed unto his brother. Now there were with us seven brothers, and the first, when he married a wife, deceased, having no issue, left his wife to his brother. Likewise, the second also, third unto the seventh. And last of all, the woman died. Therefore, in the resurrection, whose wife shall she be of the seven? For they all had her. So he says, there are seven brothers. First one married a wife, then he died. So brother number six married a wife, brother 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then the lady died. So we go to heaven, whose wife is it? Whose wife is it? See, that's kind of a strange thought, isn't it? Yeah, especially if you don't believe in the resurrection. And you're asking about going to heaven. It's not a real logical process. 29, Jesus answered and said unto them, you do err, not knowing the scriptures nor the power of God. Now, you don't understand God, and you certainly don't understand the Bible. And they never claimed to be experts in the Bible, and they certainly weren't. For in the resurrection, they neither marry nor are given in marriage, but are as the angels of God in heaven. And as touching the resurrection of the dead, have you not read that which was spoken unto you by God, saying, I am the God of Abraham, God of Isaac, God of Jacob. God is not a God of the dead, but of the living. So he hammers them real good. He says, first of all, he says, in heaven, it's not the same as down here. We have a lot of questions come up about this. It's not all that difficult. What it is when we get to heaven, you're going to be what you were meant to be with God, okay? And down here on earth, because we're so feeble, God said you get married and you help each other. And you fulfill each other's needs that way. So when we get to heaven, I'll fulfill all your needs there. And you won't have to be married. Does that mean when I get to heaven, I'm going to say, get away from me, and oh, I was with you for 50 years, and that's enough? No. Of course not. That's foolish thinking. You know, this always comes up. People ask that, because you mean I don't have to be married to this person later on? No. The point is, you become fulfilled with God in heaven. He fulfills all of your shortcomings, all your needs, all your desires. He'll fill you up. And so we don't need a spouse to do that there, all right? But if you enjoyed him for 50 years, you can enjoy him for a million years plus more. You know, it's okay. It's not what he's saying. And then he says, as far as the resurrection, he said, I'm the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And if you think they're dead, they're not. They're alive. They're alive up in heaven. And so these people who said, well, we don't believe in the resurrection, he says, God is not God over a bunch of dead people. That's not who he is. All right? He takes people into another dimension of existence, and they live there with him. He's a God of the living. All right? Verse 33, when the multitude heard this, they were astonished at his doctrine. Or in other words, they heard that question answered, and they were scratching their head. How are you going to answer that one, Jesus? Simple. Here we go. Bang, it's answered. All right. So once again, in front of the crowd, Jesus has crushed them. Not because he's trying to say, yeah, what do you think of that? But because he knows so much more than they know. And he can just simply answer these questions. And that, when you heard a question like that, you said, how are you ever going to answer that? He did it, no problem. And so they're going to try a few more things to try and trip him up. Now, we're going over to chapter 23. And this is, in my opinion, not just mine, the passage that's going to nail the coffin shut on Pharisees, scribes and Pharisees. Jesus is going to explain as fully as he can to the people. Because what's been happening? Here comes the temple leadership. Should we pay taxes to Caesar? Jesus gives an answer. They crawl back in their hole. Pretty soon they come back out again. Who gives you the authority? He says, John the Baptist. No, never mind. They crawl back in their hole. And they keep crawling back in their hole. Sadducees say, yeah, we got a question he won't be able to answer. And they come out with that. And they're dumbfounded by his answer. And everybody's crawling back in a hole. And so as the people are watching it, they're thinking, well, you know, these are the guys that run this place. And then there's Jesus, and he keeps slapping them down. So we don't know what to think. What do we think about the Pharisees? Well, here we're going to get an explanation about the Pharisees. And this is pretty intense. So let's begin reading it, and then we'll stop and start to make a list. Because Jesus is actually going to make a list of eight charges against the Pharisees. If you go back in Matthew to what we call the Beatitudes, remember that? A few weeks ago we did the Beatitudes. We talked about blessed are the poor in spirit, for they're blessed are the meek, blessed are. And there's eight of those. Well, he's going to have eight woes or curses on the Pharisees, and he's going to explain to the people. And you got to look very carefully. Chapter 23, verse 1. Then spake Jesus to the multitude. So now he's speaking to the whole crowd of people, which is huge by now, because they're watching every few minutes. Somebody comes out, takes another crack at Jesus, and gets sent away with their tail between their legs. So now a big crowd is gathered, which is the last thing the Pharisees want. Last thing they want. All right, and here we go. verse 2, saying the scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. All right, and so he goes back to the temple. And the original temple was a tabernacle. You remember it used to be a tent. And Moses got instructions from God to make a tent. This is going to be your worship place. And so the tabernacle, or the tent, Moses was there, and he gave instructions. This is how you people are going to do it. And you'll see over and over, Moses just starts reading. He'll start reading what God said. And Moses would stand up and say, "Now pay attention. Here's what God said." All right, so he says, the scribes and Pharisees sit in Moses' seat, or they are in charge of the temple, the tabernacle. That's the position they hold. All therefore whatsoever they bid you observe, that observe and do. They're going to do like Moses did, and they're going to read, here's the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not lie, thou shalt not commit adultery, and they'll go down through a list. All right. And when you do this, you need to bring a sacrifice to the temple. All that instruction came from Moses. He says, when they're reading those words out of those first five books of the Bible, you pay attention. You do what they tell you to do. And I'm sure the Pharisees are going, he's saying we're okay. Do not ye after their works, for they say, and do not. So he says, when they're reading you the Bible, you listen, pay attention, you do it, because the Bible will always ring true. But he said, don't follow their example, because their example is very poor. All right? They say and don't do. What do you call that? Liar. All right. Usually we call it hypocrisy. Well, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, but you never do it. So in other words, you can't be trusted. The way you behave outweighs what you say. Right? You can't be trusted. Here's verse 4. For they bind heavy burdens and grievous to be borne, lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves will not move them with one of their fingers. So if you're going to listen to the Pharisees, they're going to say, all right, now here's what you got to do. Sunday when you get up, or Sabbath day when you get up, all right, make sure you don't start a fire. Don't you dare start a fire. And when you pick up that thing you got to pick up, if it weighs more than a pound, put it down. Don't pick it up. All right, don't do that. And when you're going to walk over somewhere, don't you dare walk any farther than that. And so they begin, here's a list of rules that goes on and on and on and on and on. All right? You can't do this. You can't do that. You can't talk to this person. You can't say this. And they go on and on and on. And I told you they had like 630 rules that they would tell you. Now, if I stood here and said, here's 630 rules, it would take me more than, one night. We'd be at it for several nights. And you write all the rules down and say, 630? I can't do that. And you couldn't. There's too many. You can't even think of it. You get up on Sabbath morning, you don't know whether to light a fire, pick up the coffee pot, you don't know what to do. There's so many rules. You're bound to break one any minute because there's so many. And so the burden that they put on you is, I don't know about these rules. I just can't handle all these rules. And he said, believe me, they're not going to say to you, well, here, let me help you. Here's my finger, and I'll pick up one of those. They won't even do that. They wouldn't lift a finger to help you. They wouldn't lift a finger to say to you, hey, let's try to get this stress level down a little. No, they want to keep it high. Now he says, they lay burdens on you and they wouldn't help you with one finger. Verse 5. But all their works they do for to be seen of men. All right, no. Their main goal as a Pharisee is to be up in front of people and have people look at them and say, ooh, there goes a Pharisee. There goes a scribe. Look, those people are wonderful. They love that, all right? They make broad their phylacteries. Now, what's a phylactery? Phylactery is a little leather pouch. And it would be just a little small square of a leather pouch, and you would wear it around your head. And on the front here would be this little leather pouch, and you'd have a strap on, and you wear that. It's a phylactery. Inside your phylactery, inside your little leather pouch, would be verses out of Exodus, probably. You know, love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and mind and strength. And they fold it up in a little tiny piece of paper and shove it in their phylactery. And so when they say, well, look at him. He wears the Bible on his forehead. He's walking around with the Bible on his forehead. So he must really believe in it. He said, but they broaden their phylacteries. Or that is, used to be a little square. Pretty soon it's a great big old thing across their head. Look at all the verses I got on my head. You know, I must really be holy as I carry around a whole big pouch of verses on my head. What else do they do? He said, they enlarge the borders of their garments. In those days, of course, they wore a long inner garment which wrapped around your legs and around your shoulders and everything, and then they had robes, that's what we'd call it, on the outside. All right, and so the Pharisees enlarged the hem of the garment, or that is, they cut the hem up into a V and sew in another piece and then another piece, and so they'd get this garment that had a big, huge hemline. It just would be, if you stretched it out, it would be huge. And the point is, when they walk up and they walk by, this big thing goes whoosh, whoosh. It's so big, it whishes, swishes as you walk by. And they want you to hear that. That's the sound of holiness. Hear my swishing robe? Look on my head. See that big leather pouch? We're superior to you. It should be clear. Just listen to us walk by. See what else they do. And they love, verse 6, the uppermost rooms of feasts, chief seats in the synagogues. All right. So if there's anywhere a seat for an important person, they're going to take it. You know, they're never going to be last in line. They're always going to be first. They're always going to find the main seat. They're going to make themselves more important than everybody else. All right, that's the way they behave. And then verse 7, greetings in the markets, and to be called a man, Rabbi, Rabbi. All right, so they love to walk by in the marketplace. Hi, Rabbi. We might not answer. Those are a little holier than you. We don't have to talk to you. But you can hear it in our swish. You can see it on my head. And you know I sit in that chair, don't you? And so this is the way the Pharisees behave. And Jesus says, don't do like they do. Here's the way I want you to do, verse 8. But be not you called Rabbi, for one is your master, even Christ, and all ye are brethren. He said, there's one teacher, there's one master, Jesus. He's the master. The rest of us aren't masters. We're not rabbis. You go around, everybody call you rabbi. All right. Verse 9, and call no man your father upon the earth, for one is your father which is in heaven. And of course, that verse is used a lot to talk about Catholics. Because what do they call their priest? father, all right? Is that the right thing to do? Well, it doesn't sound like it here, okay? And the point is, if you think you are superior, well, you should be called father, and then you're missing the point. Verse 10, neither be called masters, for one is your master, even Christ. All right, so he says, don't look to operate like the Pharisees. Don't look to be called a big shot or anything. Just be a regular old person. 11, he that is greatest among you shall be your servant. That's how it works. Whosoever shall exalt himself shall be abased. If you think you're superior, you'll find out after a while that you're not. It's funny how life works that out, and God works it that way too. He shall humble himself, shall be exalted. All right? So I don't want you to behave like that. I don't expect you to look for prominence among people, not in the clothes you wear, not in the way you talk, not in the verses strapped to your head, all of those things. He said, I don't want you to do that. But now he begins verse 13. Woe! All right, and so we have eight woes, eight things that he says, here's what you do not do. And he's telling these people here in front of the crowd, here's what's wrong with the Pharisees. Now, he just gave a little explanation, which was they would hear and see that, of course, right away. There's some things that they didn't quite figure out, and he's going to explain now what's wrong with the Pharisees. And you say to me, well, is this what, we don't have to worry about Pharisees anymore? Oh, do you think anybody thinks they're superior? Well, maybe. There might be a few people, all right, who don't quite get that. Well, here goes a list that Jesus made. Woe to you, or this is going to take you down. I'm going to explain this to the main people, and of course, the Pharisees are listening. This is what's going to take you down. Verse 13. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. Say one thing and do another. For you shut up the kingdom of heaven against men. For ye neither go in yourselves, neither suffer ye them that are entering to go in. All right. So number one problem is shut up. Shut the doors of heaven. How did they manage to do that? How can they shut the doors of heaven? Well, Jesus said, what? I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh to the Father but by me. So if you want to go to heaven, you got to go through Jesus. Jesus said what? I am the door. I'm the entry point. You're going to have to come through me to get to heaven. The Pharisees are saying, he's not the Son of God. He's not that. He's hardly even a prophet. You know. And that always amazes me, because well, I told my eye doctor Thursday, he said, how's your eye? I said, well, it's hard to see. I said, but I'm glad every day. And he said, why? I said, because when I can't see out of this eye, it reminds me that Jesus took people who were born blind and made them see, corrected their vision. And I said, you can't do that. And he agreed. He said, no, I can't do that. I don't think he believed that Jesus did either. So I talked a little more. But point is, who ever walked around and healed blind eyes? Anybody? Anybody ever do that? whoever walked around and took people, like the lady, this is my favorite personal case, is a lady who's bent over who can't stand up. That means she has what we call curvature of the spine. Every bone in her back is deteriorated, and now she stands like this because her bones are all deteriorated. And Jesus says, stand up. She stands up. He made all new bones just like that. Don't tell me that's not the Son of God. And that's what I told my eye doctor. He recreated a new eye inside of that person's head. He said, I suppose I got to go think about that. I hope he does. The point is, these people are saying that Jesus, he's not, don't, he, who else can do what he did? Anybody feed 5,000 with a boy's lunch? Anybody walk across the Sea of Galilee on the water? You know, anybody speak to the waves and the wind and it stops? Believe me, I've tried that and I can't do it. All right? He was fantastic. He just did what nobody else can do. And they're saying, he's not the Son of God. We're going to take him down. We're going to get rid of him. And so as they are rejecting him themselves, they're telling the multitude, don't you believe in him? Don't you believe in him? Or they're shutting the door to heaven, people who want to go in. And so Jesus would say later, he would say, these people wanted to come to heaven and they were standing in their way. And so they took violence and got in. The kingdom of heaven suffereth violence. They said, we're going in, whether you Pharisees like it or not, get out of the way. And they shoved them aside and they believed in Jesus. And that's where this crowd is thinking now. Well, they don't seem to think he's Jesus. We saw him do those things. And there, he said, so number one on my list that's going to take you down is you stop people from going to heaven believing in me. All right. Verse 14. Here's the second one. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you devour widows' houses and for a pretense make long prayer. Therefore, you shall receive the greater damnation. He says, you're a hypocrite. Here's why. He says, when you get up to pray, you'll stand up in the middle of the marketplace, or you'll be somewhere in that 27-acre temple, and you'll say, I'm going to pray now, and you'll pray for an hour. And people go by, you've been praying for a whole hour. You must be a real holy man. What they don't realize, that there was a widow whose husband died, who lost her support, and she lives in a house by herself, and they repossessed her house and kicked her out. He says, they devour widows' houses. And so the Pharisees are kind of famous for going to widows and saying, I'm holding your mortgage here. You're not paying. You're out. This is mine. See you later. All right, so they do what? Kick the widow out of her house and then turn around and pray for an hour. You can see how holy I am. All right? Jesus said, no, you can't kick widows out of their houses and leave it like it's okay. He said, that kind of behavior is really high on Jesus' list. He says, you treat widows with respect, and orphans are treated with respect. Make sure you do. And they were doing just the opposite. So there's a second woe. He said, you devour widows' homes. Or you kick them out. Throw them out. Let's see what the next one is. Verse 15. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. He keeps calling them hypocrites. For you compass sea and land to make one proselyte. When he is made, you make him twofold more the child of hell than yourself. They want more Pharisees. And so they go anywhere. Said you'd cross the ocean if you thought there was one person over there who would believe your story. You'd do anything. You say, well, isn't that a good thing? Well, he says, when you're done with them, they're twice as bad as you. They're worse. They're worse than you are. Why? Because what do you think they're teaching them? There's a widow over there. You can get her house for nothing. You know, she can't pay for it. You go over there and get it. And fix your phylactery. Make a bigger one. Be more impressive. That's what they're teaching their followers. All right? And so that attitude, they'll go anywhere, is what was driving the Apostle Paul when he was still Saul. He's going to go everywhere and get rid of Christians. He's a Pharisee. He was trained in the Pharisee tradition. So he says, I'll go to the high priest, give me arrest warrants, I will go serve him. I'll go into Damascus. I'll cross the borders of Israel and go into a foreign country. I'll serve these. And he going to Damascus to proselyze, if you will. And of course, when Paul met Christ on the road to Damascus, became a Christian, then he started preaching the gospel with the same intensity. And what did they do? Pharisees followed him all over Europe, all over Asia Minor. He went and started a church in Galatia. They waited till he left, and they come in behind him and say, you know, he doesn't have it right. We're here to correct his error. We're going to make you believe like we do. You're going to have to be circumcised. And so that attitude was not one that he liked. All right, let's go to the next one. That is, you have zeal, but no, you don't train people. You train them to be like you. All right, the next, whoa. This one's more difficult. Here we go. 16. Woe unto you blind guides, which say, whosoever shall swear by the temple, it is nothing. Whosoever shall swear by the gold of the temple, he is a debtor. You fools and blind, for whether is greater, the gold or the temple that sanctifieth the gold? Whosoever shall swear by the altar, it is nothing. Whosoever sweareth by the gift that is on the altar, he is guilty. You fools and blind, for whether is greater, the gift or the altar that sanctifieth the gift? Whosoever therefore shall swear by the altar, sweareth by it and by all things thereon. Whosoever shall swear by the temple, sweareth by it and by him that dwelleth therein. He that shall swear by heaven, sweareth by the throne of God and by him that sitteth thereon. You have to know a little bit about Jewish culture here. They took oaths commonly. It was nothing for them to take an oath. And particularly businessmen, all right? But Pharisees, certainly a lot of those were businessmen too. They take an oath, all right? So I'm going to sell you this. I swear that I'll sell you this. I swear this is true. I swear that is true. I swear by the gold in the temple. And so they're trying to teach people, the common people, when you take your oaths, when you're doing your business, when you're talking to your neighbors, whatever you do, you swear an oath, I promise I'll do this. You swear by the gold in the temple. And Jesus said, why would you swear by the gold? The temple is what matters, not the gold. And so they would swear by the gift on the altar. You come in and you give something to, maybe you're out of your garden, you bring a lamb, give it to the temple, all right? Who's going to get all that gold and all that stuff that comes in? Pharisees. So they're going to teach you that it's more important for you to bring gold into the temple than it is to honor the temple. Why? Because they're going to get their hand in their pocket and get some of that. All right? In the same way when they bring a gift to an altar. People brought things from their garden and put them on the altar. All right? And the priest could eat those things. So the Pharisees said, here's what's most important, what you bring and you bring in here. Jesus said, no. The temple's more important than the gold that's in it. The altar's more important than the stuff that's on it. He said, so if you're going to swear, if you're going to say, I promise, I swear. Our society doesn't do that. We don't care. We'll lie like rugs anytime we feel like it. All right, we're kind of a deteriorated society. We're happy to lie, all right? It's not the way it was then. So you make an oath, you swear, I promise. He says, if you're going to swear, swear by the temple. That's God's house. Or you'll be saying, I swear to God, God's house, I promise to do this. That's what we try to do when people get married, you know? You know, they say, I promise to love, honor, and obey till death do us part. I promise those things. You make a promise, it's not just to the person, but to God. Make a promise to God. Right? And so he says, and when you swear, Jesus said, you can swear by heaven if you want. And when you swear by heaven, make sure you're saying, you understand, I promise God I'm going to do that. I promise. So that's how your oath should be, by the holy things. And the Pharisees are trying to take the attention off of God and off of the altar and off of the temple and put it on the money. Why? Because they had their hand in the till. Okay? All right, let's go on here. Verse 23. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay mint of tithe of mint, anise, and cumin, have omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, and faith. These you ought to have done, and not to left the others undone. You blind guides would strain at a gnat and swallow a camel. Right, and this one, he says, you tithe mint, and you ignore faith. And so they, a good Pharisee would go to his garden. Let me see. Here's my mint. I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 10th one, I'll go to the temple. 1, 2, 3, 4, 7. 10th one, go to the temple. Same thing with cumin. Even to the point, and this shows how intent they were, they would sometimes, you know, right, you got a plant, count the leaves. Of course, you're going to eat the leaves. It's the cumin or whatever you're going to use in your cooking. Eat the, count the leaves. Let's see. We got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 10. Keep that leaf on that plant. All right. So they're out there for hours counting mint and anise, cutting plants, cutting leaves off, bringing them into the temple. Here's my offering. See what I did? I did all that work. Isn't it wonderful? But we don't believe in Jesus. Don't ask us to believe in Jesus. We don't do that. All right? So he says, you swallow a camel. That's hard, all right? How are you going to swallow a camel? So you choke on a gnat. A little tiny fly goes in there. Maybe you've had that happen, right? A little tiny fly goes. Says, you choke on a gnat. But you'll swallow a camel. You don't mind stealing widows' houses, he says. But you never miscount your mint in the garden. All right, now let's go on here. Verse 25, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. You make clean the outside of the cup of the platter, but within are full of extortion and excess. A blind Pharisee, first clean which is within the cup and the platter, then the outside, that they may be clean also. All right, so he says you got all these inner bad things. You got the inner dirt in your soul, but you on the outside you look clean. On the outside, you got your long skirt. You got the thing around your head. Everybody says, "Oh, you're just wonderful." He says, "You're filthy on the inside." Verse 27. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. You're like those whitened sepulchres, which indeed appear beautiful outward, but inside are full of dead men, bone, and all uncleanness. All right, so he says, inside of your heart is evil. You like they came to a sepulcher, they painted the outside. They whitewashed tombs. And they'd have this whitewashed tomb. Say, "Well, yeah, that's nice." Open the thing up, it's full of stinking bones. That's the way Pharisees are, he said. They look good on the outside, not good on the inside. And then one more, verse 29. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, here, because you build the tombs of the prophets, garnish the sepulchres of the righteous, and say, "If we had been in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partakers with them in the blood of the prophets." So, there's a tomb in Jerusalem, Isaiah's tomb. And we know they took Isaiah and killed him. They sawed him in half. All right? And there's where Isaiah is buried. And the Pharisees would go, "Oh, let's build a little monument around this tomb. Because if it was us, we never would have done that to Isaiah." And there's Jeremiah's tomb. And let's build another monument around Jeremiah's tomb because they threw him in a well. But we would never do that. That's not who we are. So we're going to build a monument outside of these tombs. And they're building monuments all around to these tombs and saying, "We would never do that." And they went in the back room and made a plan to kill Jesus. Just like that. So he said, you'll cover a tomb and say, "Oh, we would never harm a prophet. That's who we are. But we're going to murder Jesus. Matter of fact, we're going to get it done in a couple days. And we're going to work out a plan so intense that we can arrest him early in the morning and have him crucified before 9 o'clock. So, there's your Pharisees. Pretty tough bunch, huh? Pretty tough bunch. All right, I'm out of time. Because we could go on, but we'll have to catch up later. Thank you.